Reminder, Abby.
Sorry, I got distracted.
Oh my god, we're already recording?
Yeah.
We were recording and you were just sitting there reading Dear Abby?
Well, you know, I hit record and then I got distracted by Dear Abby, as I often do. I mean, it's always, they always, the problem with Dear Abby is they always give you these, like, super compelling, you know, titles. Like, my husband's texts offended me, so I confronted him and he said he was drunk and stupid. Now I want to read that.
I feel like that's a really common story, though.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's what's great about Dear Abby is that we can relate to these stories, and we have the ideas already in our heads of what advice we would give were we Dear Abby.
Yeah, we've played that game, like when we're waiting in long lines and stuff, we just read advice columns.
You read the advice column.
You read the question, and then you give your own advice.
Yeah. And then you evaluate the advice that Dear Abby or Ask Amy or Hints from Heloise would give.
Yeah.
Ask
and sometimes I really disagree with them.
Yeah, a lot of times, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, famously, Dr. Ruth, the sex columnist, was, you know, you'd read her column back in the day in the early aughts, and she'd be like, well, actually, I don't believe in bisexuality. You have to just choose a lane. Stuff like that, which it's not,
that's not how a lot of people
that's
are.
Not how people would say that these days, right?
Also, Sue Johansson, the sex advice giver on Talk Sex with Sue Johansson, was really anti-anal sex.
Oh yeah,
which is kind of homophobic.
She'd always just be like, that's where the poop comes from.
Yeah, which I always thought was really funny.
Yeah,
but
I mean, that's how I feel about it, but I'm not the main I'm not the main audience.
Well, you know, I don't know. Everybody likes, I mean, not everybody, but like lots of people.
No, I think the
like
main audience
sex.
For anal sex is people that are really into anal sex and like, God bless you. Go for it, you guys.
Yeah. If listen, if
more
you
for you is what I say.
Stuff up your butt, if you want to put stuff up other people's butts, if you wherever you want to put things, wherever you want things, I want you to have it.
As long as you get the okay sign.
Yeah.
From your partner or an enthusiastic consent, right?
Hell yes.
Hell yes. Stick that in my ass.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, exactly.
Get that. Go for it.
Yeah.
You won't get a hell yes from me, though.
About anything?
No, not about any. Lots of things you'll get a hell yes about, but not about anal sex from me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so we've covered that.
Yeah.
What else is happening?
Well,
we've had a long weekend. My sister was staying with us for a little bit.
Let's give the news from Lake Wobegon of, you know, like what's been going on around here.
Yeah. My sister had strep throat. She's a senior in college. We were like, hey, just come here.
Oh, these have advanced. I'm just looking at these tags. These tags have advanced. I'm like, oh, I'm trying to figure out where the tags should go. Retagged some things, looks like.
Oh, just one. I just put one tag.
Okay, cool.
We're starting at 6:02 with this episode.
6:02, which is going to be different in everyone's book, but what we're saying is we're halfway through the last...
Yeah, we read half of the last chapter.
The last
chapter. For the last sode, and we read the rest of the book for this sode.
This is the sode where we have read the entire book besides the appendices, which I consider part of the book, but which I cannot get this one to read.
Yeah, no, it's not happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, like...
Oh, I think Scout has a question.
Oh, yeah, she is raising her leg.
oh, yes, no, wait, she's just licking her anus. Scout, anus,
pro anal licking.
Pro rim jobs, self-rim jobs, for sure. Yeah,
for sure.
She's raising her hand to say, or her foot to say, yes, I am into licking my own butthole.
Yeah, I wonder if she'd be into another cat licking her butthole.
I think she'd be willing to try it with Nico, but that's never going to happen.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, she's, like, very into, like, you know, getting in Nico's face and being like, hey, Nico, can we have, like, some sort of
relationship
where I lick you and maybe you lick me back?
Wouldn't it be funny if Scout and Nico ended up having, like, one of those classic love stories where, like, they hate each other at first and then maybe they have to go through some kind of challenge together?
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe I should just put them both out of the house at the same time and then they have to, like, figure out how to survive out there on their own, like a Homeward Bound type of situation.
I'm thinking more of it's like Nico is a real uptight, like, architect probably who's trying to make it, you know, trying to make it climb the corporate ladder in her architecture firm, right? And so one day, you know, all she wants, she's desperate, she's got like a hand armful of architectural drawings, and you know, her glasses are on and her hair's in a bun, and she's just trying to get a latte from Starbucks. That's all she needs to like start her morning, which is having a bad day. And then like free spirit Scout, who like never hardly even goes to Starbucks to buy lattes or anything, just because she can't be like bothered, you know, she's like coming out of the Starbucks just as Nico's going in, and whoops, wouldn't you know it, they just
and
Scout spills
like,
her Starbucks all Scout's over Nico's
only
architecture
coming
plans
out of Starbucks because like she accidentally skateboarded in there.
Yeah, or she skateboarded in there because she was protesting the Starbucks next door
to the Starbucks next door to the Starbucks.
Yes, yeah, the Starbucks next door to the Starbucks, but she still wanted to get a Starbucks, so she skateboarded in there. And also her like hat, usually she wears her baseball hat backwards, but today she like wore it forwards because like she was trying to avoid an ex.
Or just getting arrested from the protest.
Oh, maybe, yeah. That's probably it too, yeah. But then they like meet and like they hate each other at first.
Yeah.
But then it turns out that Scout like dropped the keys to her artist loft in Nico's architecture plans. And so Nico being a good person, even though she's annoyed, like she has to bring back the keys.
Right. And then when she comes in, she's like, wow, these are really beautiful artists.
Yeah.
Arts. Mm-hmm. Artistries.
Right. Because like Nico's like office at the architecture place has like got all of her like watercolors all over the place. You know, that she's been doing and nobody appreciates at the architecture firm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so you mean Nico's been doing watercolors and Scout appreciates them?
Yeah, because Scout's like a true artist, and she sees that like Nico has that inside of her too.
Yeah.
And then like they sort of gain respect for each other over the mystical scavenger hunt they have to go on.
I don't know. Like, I just really see Scout as more of a, like, gutter punk.
Oh, yeah?
But, like, I don't know.
In New York, they call them crust punks.
Yeah. It's just, like, Scout, I just can't ever not think of Scout in human form as Avril Lavigne.
You can never not think of her in human form as Avril, as anything but Avril Lavigne.
Yeah.
She's always Avril Lavigne
in
cat form for you.
Scout in cat form is Avril, or in human form is Avril Lavigne.
Yeah.
I would say Nico in human form is like maybe kind of like Donna from The Office, but like sweeter.
Which one's Donna from The Office?
Retta.
Oh, yeah. Wait, what? From Parks and Rec?
Oh, yeah. From Parks and Rec. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
Or maybe more like Phyllis from The Office, actually.
Well, Phyllis is the redhead, right?
No. Phyllis is
Is the other Office one. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's Scout? Or that's
no,
Nico?
No, that's Nico.
Oh, Nico to me is like, I want to say Ron Jeremy, but without all the sexual assault.
Wait, what? Nico is Ron Jeremy?
Why? A secret. I don't know, because she's like, well, I don't know. I guess I just learned that of all the accusations against Ron Jeremy, so I guess maybe that's not a great example.
I don't know. Now that I feel like now that I've identified Phyllis from The Office, now I can't unsee human Nico as Phyllis from The Office.
Okay. I guess you know who I see? Nico to me is more of a Jennifer Tilly type, just sort of like,
who's that?
She's the one that's like, she was in Liar Liar as like the client. She's like, I just want to take all of this money because I need all the money.
Oh,
that kind of thing.
Kind of how Phyllis talks too.
Yeah. All right. Maybe it's combo, same type. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I feel like, yeah, so can you imagine, like, what's the meet-cute scenario where Phyllis from The Office and Avril Lavigne fall in love?
I think they're both at a fetish club.
For what kind of fetish?
Like whips and chains and, you know, like S&M, like fetish. And also, you know, like foot worship and just general, like, pain and pleasure type thing. You know, just imagine your basic Cenobite.
So just like a club. You know, Fet Life, but IRL. Like a Fet Life meetup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like that place that everybody talks about.
The sex club in Providence.
Yeah.
Okay, yep.
Yeah, sure. It's like the sex club in Providence, as I imagine that to be. And they are both like, they've both got masks on and they both just start going to town on each other anonymously. And then eventually they go outside to drink some fruit punch.
But it has to be something where they hate each other at first. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense for Scout and Nico's love story.
Oh, I think there's room for that in the fetish club. Okay. You know?
Yeah.
Like a little hatred play kind of thing.
Oh.
And so they're just like yelling at each other and screaming and like, you know, taking turns whipping each other. I don't know. I'm not, I don't know.
See, I think like, okay, so I think like Phyllis is, she's, you know, in a relationship with the refrigerator or appliance salesman or whatever.
Well, yeah, Vance refrigeration.
Yeah. And she thinks that he's interested in Avril Lavigne.
So she's like gonna seduce Avril Lavigne and like he's gonna watch behind like glass.
No, she's just like, oh, I hate you, Avril Lavigne, you're trying to steal my husband. Oh,
okay, like it's your Jolene situation.
Yeah,
Avril Jolene.
Yeah. And then like, yeah, and then so she's just like trying really hard to like, you know, get like torture Avril Lavigne, but then one day like Avril Lavigne skateboards into a Starbucks and Phyllis just happens to be in there, and Avril Lavigne spills her crust punk latte all over Phyllis, and Phyllis is like, or no, maybe it's Phyllis spills her pumpkin spice latte all over Avril Lavigne's
crust punk latte.
And then Phyllis feels really guilty about it.
And so she's like, here, oh, let me make it up to you. I've got two tickets to this fetish club in Providence, Rhode Island.
Yeah, okay, I think we got it.
Okay,
that's the movie.
And that's also the story of how our cats start to lick each other's buttholes?
Yeah.
All right. So... why we are here today. This podcast is called My Girlfriend Begrudgingly Reads Dune. And we are almost there. This is the last time we're going to be talking about a chapter that we read for this podcast, because there's no more chapters.
There might be some other episodes. We might do a post-book pre-movie. Definitely do a post movie.
We'll probably do a, like a reunion episode where the guy from all of the
Harmony commercials.
Yeah, the guy from all the eHarmony commercials comes and he's like, I invented this thing and it's not for gay people, but eventually they'll kick me out and then they will make it for gay people. And then they'll play that song. It's like ding ding ding. This will be an everlasting love. This will be the one I've been waiting for.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll come in and he'll be like, how did you guys meet each other? And we'll be like, tender. And he'll be like, okay, bye.
Yep. So we'll do that episode for
I was thinking of the guy from the, like, that is on all the Real Housewives. You know, there's just that one guy who is like, his job is to... after Real Housewives is over, he has a whole 30 minutes to talk about like what happened on Real Housewives. And then later, whenever they do a reunion episode, he's the guy that like
narrates it.
He's the guy that like hosts it and like says, you were mad at her for this thing. And you were mad at him for this thing. And it's the same guy for all of those shows.
Or let's just get Jonathan Van Ness and do Gay of Dune.
Oh, yeah, that's fun. Yeah. I bet he would do Gay of Dune if they did, like... well, you know, they're going to do the Bene Gesserit show on HBO, so maybe he'll come back for Gay of Dune.
Wait, are they going to do a Bene Gesserit show?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It's like a prequel. It's all about the Bene Gesserit.
Oh, you can't just put a sweater on a chair with things that poke up like that.
Oh.
It's going to ruin the sweater.
It seemed wet, and I needed room.
No, I know, but you can't just... look, it's already ruining the sweater.
Oh, no, I've already ruined it.
Alright, I think it's salvageable.
Oh, okay. Okay. For the listener, the sweater is salvageable. It might have had spikes on it. But
you know, you guys know when you, like, throw a sweater over something that has something sticking up on it, like the back of a chair with these two little things sticking up on the back of the chair, and then you get bumps in your sweater, and then you're like, fuck it, I just have to wash this again.
Mm.
Ugh, it It's the worst.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm glad that isn't happening this time.
It's okay. I still love you, but we're going to have to work on this. All
right. We'll watch out for that one.
Yeah.
So, what happened in this chapter? Previously, we basically, Paul is holding court in the old Arakeen residence where the story started, really. And he was doing that
in our last episode too. We're same setting. Yes, that's what I'm saying. The whole chapter takes place
I'm doing it previously on.
Oh, okay, go ahead. Yeah.
And his mom is there and she's like giving him advice. Gurney's there. Chani is there. Who else is there?
Fade Rautha
is there in the entourage of the Emperor of the Known Universe. Shaddam the fourth
and he's there, the Emperor's there. Count Fenrig.
Count Fenrig is there, and Paul was recently just like, why have I never seen Count Fenrig in my pressing visions?
Oh, the Reverend Mother Helen Gaius.
Yeah, the Hellas Mother Reverend Gaius Monheim. Hellas Pond. She's there. And the Princess Ireland.
Princess Ireland's is there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Kathy Ireland is like there. Kathy Ireland's definitely there. And then like a bunch of the like guards or whatever.
Oh yeah, the Fedukin.
Yeah.
Yeah. As well as they're just, you know, they like whenever they need a Sarduakar like prisoner, they can bring them in.
Yeah.
It's a whole, you know, it's a real shit show for the Empire as it was.
Yeah.
And Paul is, you know, he's just like, he's getting all his ducks in a row. This is very sort of like end of Godfather Part One territory.
It's a real who's who of the Duneverse.
He's settling all his old debts. Yeah. It's having a good time. So you want to go?
Alia's not there.
Alia's not there, but she is still.
I think she'd add a lot to this.
We have found out that she is still out there, as any good Fremen child is doing. She's slitting throats and what's the other thing she's supposed to be
taking names
and like putting tags on people for like water collection. She's like, sponge this one out. You're gonna get 4 liters out of this guy. You're gonna get 8 liters out of this guy. He's super watery.
Listen. I'm a little ashamed to admit this because even my 20, almost 21-year-old sister laughed at me today, but I just recently learned that you can replace your Liebman mop head, and I replaced our Liebman mop head today. And so I kind of, you know, this is like the mop. If you ever saw that movie, Joy, the movie about the mop lady with Jennifer Lawrence.
I didn't see it, but I know of it.
Yeah. So she invented this kind of mop.
The kind of where it's like
self-ringing.
It's like a jellyfish, and it's like it's got loops.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't have like strings. It's got loops, and the loops are attached to the stick, and you can pull the loops taut.
Yeah.
And then turn
the handle.
The handle so that it squeezes out the mop.
Yeah.
And then you can loosen that.
And she came up with this idea because she had to mop up some glass and she was trying to wring it out with her hand and she was getting cuts on her hand.
Ouch, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, I think that basically like one of those Liebman mops, but like really big, would work really well for water harvesting. Like if the person is like the mop head and they just get wound around like a stick and then there's like a cranky thing.
So do they cut the person into strips and then attach half the top part of the person strips to like the...
I think they attach something to the belly button.
Okay.
And that...
You would always attach something to the belly button.
Yeah, that's just me. It's very Caitlin. I always attach something to the
belly button. She always attacks the belly button first.
Yeah. And then you tie that to like the bottom of the pole. And then you string up the arms and legs, you know, kind of like on a spit. And then you attach that to like the ringy outy thing. All right,
so the bottom of the pole is stuck straight into the belly button. The arms and legs are attached to the sort of
the
movable
cranky,
part.
The cranky, ringy outy thing.
Yeah.
And then you just crank it and just ring out all the person's water.
You know, babe, I think you have discovered the most efficient way to wring the water out of a human body that exists.
They should hire me.
Yeah, they should.
Yeah.
The new production of the Dune Part 2 or whatever it's going to be, they should hire you.
Yeah.
Because I bet this movie, they're not going to get so much into the squishing and wringing out of people for their water.
They don't. I mean, but, Herbert doesn't get into it.
But yeah, I think that probably next time they're going to be like, all right, everybody's waiting on bated breath to find out how
you get the water out.
And
yeah,
we just heard about this lady in Massachusetts who has got the system.
Yeah.
At long last.
Yeah.
It has to do with, it's got some celebrity appeal because it has to do with Jennifer
Lawrence.
Lawrence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that mop lady.
And that mop lady.
Okay, wait. So here's my question. If I had to run some experiments on this method, what kind of life form would you want me to use to simulate the experience?
Of crushing a human into...
Wringing out a human for water.
Well, I think you got it. I mean, okay, do you want to start small with, like, squirrels?
Yeah, squirrels. I mean, we have squirrels aplenty. We could trap lots of squirrels.
Mm-hmm. I was just saying to you the other day, we are not hurting for squirrels in this neighborhood.
Yeah, it's like, true. Well, and the squirrels, you know, you can sort of just do the experiment of what if you add the tail to the limbs that are strung up, and then, like, you could...
Very important if you're thinking about eventually doing this with humans. Right. What are you going to do with this big fluffy tail?
No, I'm just thinking maybe you add a tail to the humans.
Oh, okay.
So you could try it with and without the tail.
Okay.
You add some kind of thing that represents a tail, you know. So okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think, a Shark Tank is my next stop.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mark Cuban is going to buy this one, I think.
Yeah. Mm. But, like, I see so many markets for this.
I feel like Shark Tank is a show that comes up a lot, and I've never, ever, ever seen a single episode, but it's, like, a powerful metaphor.
Yeah. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, I'm not champing at the bit to watch Shark Tank. Here's the thing. I know it is champing at the bit, but I just wish it was chomping at the bit.
I think it's any way you want it. Why don't we recap this episode of Dune?
Okay, the other thing is, like, I know it's home in on with an M, but...
Oh, but you want to hone in on?
I think hone in on sounds better, and I like it better.
Is it a homing pigeon or a honing pigeon?
Well, you know, I think hone, like, it makes sense to my brain, because it's like honing something is bringing it to, like, a point, right?
Sure.
And so, yeah. Okay, so we left off in our book on page 602. Mm-hmm. And this is basically where our...
Recap. We're doing the recap right now, guys. So if anybody was looking for the recap. Here's the point. If you were fast-forwarding through all the nonsense that was going ahead before, now we're doing the recap.
And by nonsense, he means brilliant banter and content.
Yeah, that one.
Our attentions turn to the Reverend Helen Mother Gaius Monheim.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got a lot of feelings. Paul's got a lot of feelings about her.
Yeah.
He's really mad at her for, like, do you understand why exactly he's so mad at her? Like, it's not just like the Gamjibar shit, is it?
Well, I mean, she's, you know, one of the things she says to him, and she's like, hey, I welcomed you into the ranks of humans. Like, you know, be a little nice to me. And he's like, no, I don't want to be that because, like, you created me through your breeding program to, like, be your puppet or your tool.
Yeah.
And I am never gonna be, I'm not your toy. And this isn't just another girl meets boy.
Uh-huh.
I will never do your bidding.
Yeah.
And he really accentuates that with lots of ellipses.
He's like, I will do anything for Arrakis, but I won't do that.
Mm-hmm. What he's really thinking he's probably going to end up doing is the jihad, because, like,
not see the jihad.
Yeah.
Him and the jihad is like me and Scout as Avril Lavigne.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's starting to realize that the jihad is inevitable. This is what he is bringing to the universe, because it's a radical, you know, what this has kind of been foreshadowed in the book, where there's this idea of this race consciousness of the human, of humanity. And it's like something that he can sense, you know, and what he senses is that, like, the body of humanity feels like stagnation coming on. We're all stuck on our little planets together, like fucking together. You know, we've got Atreides planet, we've got Harkonnen planet, we've got Fremen planet. You know, none of this, there's not enough like mixing, you know? And he's like, what I am embodying is that there's like a racial consciousness of humanity that just wants to like fuck across the universe and like bring like all of this genetic mixing, which is can only happen from like, I guess, the Fremen coming along and killing like everybody, but also fucking everybody at the same time.
Killing, fucking killing.
And just chaotic, you know, and terrible, because like what, trillions of people are gonna die, you know, for this, but also trillions of people are gonna fuck too.
That's great.
Or get raped. I think probably that's a big component of this.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
That happens. The Viking thing too.
That's what happens in warfare. Yeah. It wasn't just,
you know, just
pillage.
It took me this long to like sort of understand the whole thing with like the spice and the guild, where Paul's like, oh, the guild's unnecessary, they're just a middleman, they have no real power because they don't actually control this resource.
Well, no, it's not that they're unnecessary, they control space travel.
Mm-hmm.
But what he's saying that they're parasitic, and he talks about like the guild is parasitic in that they need the spice, but they never made a claim to control the resource that they need. They were like, we're gonna buy the spice from the Empire, and we're going to sell space travel services to the Empire, but we're not self-sufficient.
Yeah.
And now Paul has come in and he's like, I control the spice. Me. Just me, or rather me and my Fremen boys, but we have the power to destroy all the spice, which is like some kind of concoction they do where they spill.
But I feel like,
maker water onto the sand and like.
But then he starts talking. Okay, wait, we haven't gotten there yet. But like eventually in this chapter, somebody asks him his vision for Arrakis, and he's like, yeah, we are going to make it like a habitable planet for like natural resources. Other than spice.
There will be open water flowing on Arrakis and all of the Fremen, you know, this is what Liet Kynes promised them, and so that's the compact I have with them. Oh, and also,
we're still gonna keep the spice. We're gonna try to keep the spice as a resource. But it's just making me think about like development and like development of other countries and shit, where it's like people go in and like exploit the resources of other countries and profit off of them. And Paul's basically just being like, these are our resources, we're gonna profit off of this. Like, this is our shit to control and decide how much we want to like,
well, and the other thing is
economically
like,
benefit
who is us, you know? Like, Paul is not actually a Fremen. He is an Atreides, like, foreigner coming
in. He's acting like a Fremen.
Well, I mean, he's become culturally, you know, he's, but that's the whole, you know, thing.
Oh my
thing
God, is Paul a Rachel Dolezal?
Well, that's the whole thing is, like, this is a very much, I think it's a comp, it's, he's, they're dealing with this idea of, like, here comes this foreigner who is now, you know, which is a thing that happens all the time in, like, Western narratives, is, like, oh, this white guy comes along and turns out he can be a Native American better than all the other Native Americans can be. You know, like, you know who's actually the last and best samurai? Tom Cruise, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, what is he going to use this for? Is this going to be a good for the universe?
Right.
You know, like maybe genetically is I think the argument that Paul is making is that like, this is going to be good for, like, the gene pool of the human race.
Because he's not behind this eugenic shit.
No, well, like, yeah, this is kind of the opposite of the eugenics. He's like...
Sorry, guys, I'm a little tired.
When he talks to Gaius Helen Monheim, she's, like, he's spilling the beans on their secret genetic, you know, breeding eugenics process. And he's like, you got it partway right. Like, we need to... We need to do some shit with the gene pool, but what the gene pool really needs is a big old mix 'em up.
It's a big old
which is the opposite of what the Bene Gesserit are doing.
Totally. And you know, I'd be mad at the Bene Gesserit about that too. So basically, Fade Rautha Canley's Paul.
Mm-hmm. Right. He calls out Paul. Well, Paul, yeah, and Paul,
is that the right word?
Yeah, they're using the
Well, first of all, Paul like declares his intention to marry Princess Ireland, and like, and then like Reverend Holland Mathergonis is like going back and forth with the Shaddam IV or whatever.
Shaddam the Fourth, yeah, the Emperor.
And
of the known universe.
And he's like, no, I don't want them to get married. And she's like, no, you should like let this happen. And he's like, no, I don't want it. And she's like, come on, I'm just telling you, you just gotta like let this happen.
And then meanwhile, Chani's over here and she's like, should I leave?
Yeah.
Because Paul's like, no, you need to be by my side forever and ever. And I want you to like be watching while I set up how I'm gonna marry this tall blonde lady.
Yeah.
You know, who is a princess and probably super hot.
I do feel like,
and she's like, and he's like, Paul's, he means nothing to me.
Like really toying with Chani at this point.
Well, I mean, you see, we see so. I feel like we see a real. I mean, a transformation in Paul has been coming. You know, but like it's really coming to fruition now, and we see kind of how hard he is.
Yeah.
And how like and how political and how
calculating
and how calculating he is. Yeah, yeah. And everybody's seeing that, and Paul's seeing that in himself, and everybody's kind of like, ooh,
yeah,
is this where all of this has led, you know?
Yeah, right. It's uncomfortable for everybody, needless to say, including Jessica, including Gurney, including Chani, including Shaddam, including probably the Princess Ireland, the Mother Gates, Hanan Ronan, and all of them. So,
and Jessica.
I said Jessica already.
Okay, sorry.
And
Chani.
I said Chani already. Okay.
Did you talk about Paul?
Paul. Yep. Okay.
What about Gurney?
Okay. Canley. In case you don't remember, or you've weirdly gotten to this episode of this podcast
without
actually having read Dune or being into Dune.
Did you look something up in the glossary?
No, I just remember that Canley is basically like a duel, right? It's like
it's a set of rules that outlines how vendettas and feuds are supposed to take place amongst the great houses.
And basically, if you get challenged to it, you can't say no.
Right. And there are accepted forms of Canley, one of which is this duel that they're like getting into, another of which is like poisoning and like all this other kind of shit. But yeah. And it's just kind of like
Gurney like wants at Fade Rath a heart. He like, wants to
Sire, you promised me a Harkonnen life for my own. To like, he wants to kill Harkonnens.
And I feel like Gurney at this point is like, I also, if I die in this process, I don't even care. You know, he's like, I just want Harkonnen blood on my hands.
Basically. And also, we have to remember that Fade is the Baron now because the other Baron's dead,
right?
Because of Alia from last chapter.
So, yeah. So basically, Fade Rath calls Canley, and Paul's like, well, I have to do it because it's Canley.
But he wants to do it.
And he's he like, also wants to do it.
Paul at this whole point.
Well, it's weird because at one point he like dangles it in front of Gurney, and then he like immediately takes it away.
Yeah, which felt kind of cruel to me.
But I guess just he immediately take it away because in between him dangling in front of Gurney and him taking away, Fade Ratha calls Canley.
Well, yeah, and Paul is intoxicated by like the thrill power of the unknown that's happening right now, because like because right now he is in a total like prescience trough. He's like, there's so much chaos and like, you know, no, I can't see the future right now. No, like I've gone down a path, a blind path. I don't know what the future means, you know, what the future is going to be. If I know that like no matter what happens right now, the jihad will keep going on, but I don't. But like other than that, like, I don't know who's going to win this fight. And I think that's thrilling to him.
Yeah.
Because prescience is a trap.
Right.
I don't mind saying, like, because you're never going to read another Dune book, that prescience is a trap. That's, like, what happens in the next book.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That seems obvious to me, I guess, in a way. Like, it's sort of like, you know, people are like, oh, I want to go get, you know, my thing, my fortune or my, you know, whatever. And I'm always like, I don't want to know. I just want to be living my life. I don't need to know what's going to happen in the future. Anyway, so I mean, like, essentially there's, like, this long, drawn-out, you know, fight scene, of course,
A knife fight, yeah. Yeah,
between Paul and Fade Rautha, mm-hmm. and, guys, I'll give you one guess who wins.
Who?
It's Paul!
Yeah, because Fade has a poisoned blade, just like we knew he was going to have.
And Paul's like, he's got treachery on treachery on treachery, and he's, well, like, he's faking him out.
The
and...
poison on his blade is a soporific, which is supposed to slow Paul down, but he's got the Bene Gesserit talent of, like, turning poisons into not poisons, because he's a Kwisatz Haderach, and he's been through this shit before. He's able to turn the spice liquor into safe orgy wine or whatever, you know?
But also he basically wins because he manages to, even though Fade Rautha has him pinned, he's like, and Fade Rautha's like trying to turn his hip to like stick the needle,
got a special hip needles
into Paul, and but then Paul's like, oh, he has a weak leg right now, so he flips it around, so he's on top of Fade Rautha with the needle pressed to the ground, which actually prevents Fade Rautha from turning over, and then Paul just jams him right, like it
jams a
like
knife like into the bottom of his
Who's that guy, Phineas
Phineas Gage,
who had sounds the, like a very Phineas
who had like
Gage
the railroad bolt or whatever is like shot through his
that's
head.
What I pictured.
This is like a knife that goes up underneath his chin, like all the way up into his brain, and then he's just fucking done.
The only thing I marked in this chapter was just this sentence where it talks about Fade Rautha slipping out of his uniform, stripped down to a fighting girdle with a mail core, and mail is spelled M-A-I-L, so I understand that that's like chain mail. But I just was picturing like a woman's like girdle, but then with like a bunch of envelopes stuffed into which I thought would be really fun.
You should see Sting as Fade Rautha. I've probably shown it
to you.
Does he
have a bunch of envelopes stuffed into his girdle?
No.
Or just like kind of like a Lady Gaga, kind of like a girdle made out of envelopes.
No, it kind of has this sort of thing going on. Where he just has a...
I don't want that.
He's just got a... He's got like a V of a...
That's no...
Tidy whiteys.
No,
but
thank
like
you for
futuristic
me.
Futuristic tidy whiteys. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what he... It's, you know, it's Sting.
Yeah. So Paul wins this duel.
Not into it, huh?
No.
I kind of got a Sting body like that.
You want a Sting body?
No, I've kind of got a Sting body. Oh. I'm saying like I'm...
No, it's fine. It's more just being all greased up and...
You know, kind of like me. I mean, his abs look a lot better than mine.
I just... It's a lot
more toned than me, but
I just,
about the same size.
Can we just move on?
Okay.
God, there's just like this really extended fight scene. Okay.
So you complain about there never being any action in the movie, and then when there is some action, you're like,
I'm not
because
saying
because the
that.
Action is a knife fight.
I just described the knife fight in detail, did
you
I
did.
Not?
Sure.
In a fair amount of detail.
Yeah, a fair amount of detail, yeah.
Okay, so then, because Paul kills Fade Rautha, the Emperor's like, what the fuck? Like, somebody kill Paul. So then he, like, looks at Fenrig, and he's like, yeah, you do it. And they can, like, communicate that with just a look.
Yeah, because they're buds.
But then, basically, Paul figures out that he's never seen Fenrig in any of his prescient visions, because Fenrig is also, like, a little Bene Gesserit-y.
Yeah, he's like a failed Kwisatz Haderach. He was like an almost was.
Yeah.
And...
And then they have this, like, kinship that they, like, both feel.
Yeah.
And Fenrig's like, I don't want to kill him.
Nah, I ain't doing it. I can't do
not
this
gonna
for
do
you.
Not going to do it.
And then the Emperor is so mad at Fenrig for that, he hauls off and slaps him. And Fenrig is like... He's like, because we have been friends, I will do you this courtesy.
Uh-huh.
I will forget that you hit me just now.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't test me.
Okay, so how do you, Sean, interpret this whole, like, multiple personality thing that Paul has going on in this chapter?
Ah, where he talks about how
he's like,
the
as
Duke...
an Atreides, I blah, 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 but as Mahdi, blah, 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 blah.
I think that's all politics. I mean, that's all, like, I have powers as a Duke. You know, I'm a Duke of the Empire, and so that has this and this and such political power.
Oh, but like when but I'm at home real in my power, district yeah. with the Fremen,
right?
It's like, here's my thing in Congress, and here's my like persona when I'm like at home in my district.
Well, he's saying that there's like, that's, you know, I think it's very similar to like the Queen of England is like, I am the Empress of the Commonwealth, but I'm also the, you know, the Queen of Rhodesia, and I'm also the Queen of you know, I'm kind of the Queen of Canada, and I'm also a little bit the Queen of Australia, you know, and like, and you can have be all these different shits, you know, like for a long time there
all the different shits,
like the Queen would be like the Queen of, she'd be like, up until like the end of World War II, she would have been like, I'm also the Queen of India, you know. Yeah. and so I see Paul, like, it's, I think he's playing games with it. It's like, listen, Paul, you know, I'm, the Muad'Dib is bigger than all the shit that the Empire's got going on. And it does, and Muad'Dib doesn't play by your rules. But it's kind of like, you can deal with Paul, you can deal with Duke Paul of the Atreides, or you can deal with Muad'Dib. Uh-huh. Your choice, bro.
Yeah.
Paul has all of these rights under, like, being a duke and being royal and, like, being your cousin and all that shit. But if you don't want to, it's like a mafia thing. If you don't want to, if you don't respect the duke's rights, then you got to deal with Muad'Dib. And Muad'Dib has a crazy fanatic horde behind him. So
right.
This is going to happen.
A it can real happen the jihad Paul way or the Muad'Dib way. Situation.
Yeah.
Okay, one second. All right, I'm sorry. So it's interesting how this chapter ends, because basically, or the whole book ends, because basically, like, you know, the, so Paul's like, okay, I want to marry Princess Ireland, and Haben Maben Gabas Baben is like, Emperor, just let him do it. And
the Reverend Mother.
Yes. And
Empress Mother, Havas Mavis, Gavas Mavis.
Yeah. And and so he's like, okay, fine, who's gonna negotiate for you in this marriage or in this whatever arrangement?
Sure.
And he says Jessica, and then he tells Jessica that he wants all of the Chome Holdings as dowry.
And that's huge, because that's like the company
that
makes everything. That's like when Microsoft and Apple merged together into one big corporation, everybody, and they own everything. There's just one company. If you and like the emperor owns like a controlling or a huge share in Chome. So if like Paul gets that plus what he had as an Atreides, he might have like more than half the company.
But he claims that he wants all this stuff so that he can distribute decision-making power and control to, like, all his people, including, like, all the Fremen or something.
Yeah, well, he's like... Yeah, he's like, the Fremen are going to get... Everything the Fremen get, they're going to get through me as Muad'Dib. Uh-huh. But, like, my family, including Gurney...
Every surviving Atreides and man.
Every surviving Atreides man. They're all going to get...
Not accepting the lowliest trooper.
Yeah, they're all going to get Empire
Police. Everybody gets something to control.
It's like, if your great-great-great-great-great-grandfather got fucked by an Atreides, you're going to get something.
Yeah. You know? It's like the 48,
but that's not the Fremen. But like the Fremen, like the Atreides are all going to get their shit through the Empire and this dowry and all that stuff. But the Fremen are all going to get everything through Muad'Dib. But he's going to have enough power to like give them whatever they want, including Arrakis is going to become a nice planet,
right? And
Seleucia Segundus is going to become a nice planet. Yeah,
he tells the Emperor that he's like, listen, I'm sentencing you to live out your life on the prison planet, but don't worry, I'll make it a nice planet for you.
And the Emperor is like, ooh, because the whole point of the prison planet is it's
to not be a nice planet.
Is it's not nice so that he can have power whole Sarduak powers.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Emperor hates that because that's like the powerful Sarduak powers come from... You know, his power comes from his Sardaukar, which comes from this planet being so hellish. But then, the interesting thing is the Emperor asks him, well, what are you going to do with your hell planet, Arrakis, that makes your awesome troops? And he's like, it's going to be nice too. So, isn't Paul then saying that, like, the source of his power is also going to be blunted? Because if Arrakis is a nice place, it's not going to produce bloodthirsty Fremen, and that's the source of his power right now.
I guess so. So
besides, like, besides, of course, being able to kill, destroy. But
when
all
you
spice.
Control a bunch of resources, maybe you don't need such.
So is he banking that like when he controls like the spice, he won't need the Fedukin, he won't need the Fremen?
He's trying to avoid these battles. You know, that's like his whole thing, right?
No, I think he's. I think in this chapter, he's acknowledging that the jihad is inevitable.
I know, but at the same time, like, he's trying to, like, he's like, but the jihad's been inevitable for a while. It doesn't really matter what I do right now.
No, even if he dies right now, the jihad is still going to happen.
And
so he's
just like, I'm just trying to make life good for people.
Well, maybe that's him trying to blunt his own power, like, eventually. Like, maybe my Fremen will die off, and then the jihad will peter out because everybody's actually like all the Fremen are going to have a nice life when they come back home or something. They won't be as tough anymore.
And Paul's really trying to communicate to Chani that she is his main squeeze no matter what happens with the Princess
Ride
Ireland.
Ride or die. In the meantime, yes, he is going to marry this other chick.
Yeah.
To get political power.
But you're my real boo.
Yeah, you're my real boo. I'm going to have all my kids with you. Yeah. All of the husbandly tenderness.
Yeah.
Is going to be for you. Because, I mean, he's such a tender guy. It's like she's going to get such good loving off of him.
I guess so.
Clearly.
Yeah. He is really showing two different sides of himself.
I'm being so facetious.
He's not.
He doesn't seem like a very
tender
guy.
Well, no, I feel like when he talks to Chani in this chapter, he's being more tender.
Yeah. She's like, and then, of course, there's the famous ending where, you know, Chani gets with Jessica and you can.
Yeah. And Jessica's basically just like, guess what? We win because even though we're just concubines, history will remember us as wives.
Mm-hmm. History will remember us as wives. We'll call us wives. How do you feel? What do you think about that ending? What did that ending say to you?
Just felt weird.
Yeah?
Just felt like, wait, why is that what this book is ending on?
Mm-hmm. Why indeed? Why is that? I've thought about that a lot myself, too. It's like, what? You know, the ending sort of like, would, and some would say, you know, often the most important words of the book are like the last words. You know, we're trying to sum it all up, and the last words of this book are, you know, we who carry the name of concubine, history will call us wives.
It's like, yeah, I just was sort of like, I don't know. Yeah, just. It seems weird that, like, if we're trying to sum up the book, that's what we end on.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Well, I also know that there's several other books after this that I have no intent on reading.
Yeah,
and
you weren't going to read. And as we've come to the point, I think it's an interesting way to end the story. I still don't quite get it, you know, because it doesn't, I mean, like, so much of this book was Jessica's story.
Yeah.
And Jessica has the final say.
Yeah.
In the book. And what she has to say is that, like, I guess you could interpret that as being like, we are more important than the current circumstances are showing. We have more of a place. I don't know.
I guess it makes me uneasy, though, because it's like, I don't know. It sort of feels
like. Well, it's
like,
not like she's saying history is going to call us the real emperor or anything.
Well,
she's saying, like,
right.
History is going to call us the wives of these great men.
Right. But also, it feels like the thing where women, like, gaslight themselves into, like, thinking. I don't know. It's like the whole other woman thing where you, like, gaslight yourself into thinking, like, you're the real situation and he's doesn't really love her and he's just gonna leave her, blah blah blah. And maybe that's all true, but
well, you know, as the millennia pass in the story of Dune, the Bene Gesserit do rise to like a very prominent place.
I hope they do. That sounds great.
But we're talking, you know, 3,000 and then eventually three more, maybe 6,000 years in the future of this story.
All these people are dead.
Well, yeah.
Eh, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah. So that's the end of the book, and we're gonna say we're gonna have like one more wrap up thing.
So what do you envision the wrap up thing being?
Maybe we should have guests or something. Yeah, maybe we should have guests to like talk about their impressions of Dune, your impression, like color. I don't know. We can talk about this off air. But what I'm saying is, like,
maybe
this is...
you should have a wrap up episode with the listeners you know, who can commiserate with you about how obnoxious I was for this entire podcast.
I talked to Rob recently, and I said to him, like, whose side are you on? Are you on my? Because he's listened to the podcast. Uh-huh. I was like, is it you're on Caitlin's side? Or you're on my side? He was like, I think the pod needs both of you guys. Mm-hmm. You know, it needs someone enthusiastic about Dune, that's me, and someone who's not, and that's you. Mm-hmm. You're a Dune skeptic in some ways, or you're, I don't know what, you, I don't even know how to define, you're a Dune uninterested.
Yeah, I'm a Dune nothing. Yeah. I'm nothing, Dune. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's the end of the story. Like, Paul becomes... He basically, you know, he lines everything up where he's going to become emperor of the universe, and he's in control of the spice, and he's a religious leader, and he can see the future, and he can see the past, because he's also a Bene Gesserit Reverend Mother.
Mm-hmm.
And is that the kind of guy you want in charge of the galaxy?
You know, me personally, no.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer power to be more distributed than
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so...
How do you feel about someone who comes to your planet and completely subjugates everyone in your whole society and rips apart your religious institutions and all of your culture and replaces it with this like weird desert doctrine that, like fundamentalism that you have no experience with?
Is it better than what I have now? I mean, because I'm not trying to say that this planet is on any kind of right track.
Hard to say. I don't know. It was what you had, and now what you have is gone, and it's replaced by something else.
Yeah, I don't know. There's like, you know, depending on whether our alien overlords would be beneficent or not. Benevolent.
I'm not sure.
You know what I'm trying to say.
I think they're benevolent if you can serve them, and if you can't, they are going to kill you.
Oh, well, fuck that. No, mm-hmm. I don't want that.
No, that's what I think. That's mainly what Paul is bringing, is like, do it my way or die.
Yeah, no. I mean, listen, I don't.
I mean, this is the guy that like ordered, you know, the skins of his enemies to be made into drumheads, and ordered that everyone has to have a headache on alternate Tuesdays.
I
mean, what does she know? She only married the guy.
But also, like, she is a woman scorned, so mm-hmm. she could be writing anything about Mahdib that may or may not be true.
How did you feel about that reveal? Finding out that Princess Irulan, who's clearly been writing about Mahdib this whole time, turns out she was his wife, and while she's writing all these books, presumably. Was that an interesting twist for you?
No.
Did you see that coming, or you just didn't care, or?
I didn't care.
Okay.
I had no feelings about it.
No feelings at all?
Yeah.
Okay. Who would you marry, fuck, kill?
Uh-huh.
Chani,
uh-huh.
Princess Irulan,
uh-huh.
Jessica.
Marry Chani.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck Jessica, kill Princess Irulan.
Okay.
What about you?
So the thing you got to remember about anyone who's a Bene Gesserit is they're really good at sex.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of their thing. So,
well, I picked a Bene Gesserit.
Princess Irulan.
And fucking.
No, but Chani's not a Bene Gesserit.
Oh.
Princess Irulan is, and Jessica is. So I might go marry Chani, fuck Jessica, kill Princess Irulan.
That's exactly what I said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, we agree.
I might fuck Princess Irulan and marry, and I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want any of them to
die. We often agree on our marry, fuck, kills.
Yeah, they're not, I mean...
We're usually not far apart on that.
Yeah. So, that's the episode. What's about... Yep, that's about how long they usually are. So, yeah. We're gonna... This is not the last... This is the penultimate episode, I think.
Penultimate.
This is the Penn and Teller ultimate episode. And
the writing pin ultimate.
Yeah, and we're gonna see real soon. So I think we're done here, and we're gonna say, you're gonna say your famous catchphrase.
It's not my famous catchphrase. It's just a thing that
you stole from some other podcast.
Probably like from like two dope queens or something. Okay. Yeah, but it's just a fun thing to say.
All right, what are you gonna say?
I'm gonna say, love you. Bye.
See you later, alligator.